Charles and Eric Clapton collaborating on this number, which I love, None of Us Are Free. This is Lead Stories. I'm Yatrice Lead. And it is Free Your Mind Friday. Hopefully you still have a mind that's working after this week of craziness. But you have a chance to free your mind of things that you want to bring to our attention. It is Free Your Mind, as I said, and it means that we suspend our regular format and the entire show becomes an open forum featuring callers' opinions on major current events and issues or any topic they choose that they think is relevant and would be of interest to the rest of us listening. The number to call is 888-874-4888. I want to make one note here about radio, and that is PRN devotes enormous amounts of time to education. And the hope is that you use it well, that you find a way to integrate what you're learning into what you're doing. So that's my hope for this program in particular. But generally on PRN, it's all about information that empowers. So I say that to say don't waste valuable opportunities. Here's a valuable opportunity to interact with other people who may be reacting to what you say. It is not important, really, whether people agree with you or not, whether your position is popular or not. That is not important. What is important is that a dialogue continues and we get from each other additional information that we can take and check out a bit further and amplify the subject for ourselves. So it's a valuable opportunity, and it should feel that way to you, that you're using your time on air. And that's the other point I continue to make, is that everybody listening and participating is, in my view, an agent or potential agent of change. And that is because you're armed with new information, a new outlook, if that is possible, based on what you get out of the program. And therefore, you become an empowering force in your circle of friends and neighbors and in your community. All right, let's get on with it. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. And we will start as soon as I see numbers on the screen. 888-874-4888. G from New York City starts us off today. Hello, G.
Okay.
You're on the air.
Hello, how are you?
Okay.
Good. I'll turn my radio down. I think one thing I want to say is that we're not...
Can you
hear me?
Excuse me. Yes, but can
yes.
You turn the radio
we're not,
off?
Oh, okay. I'll turn it off. We're not really valued. I'm probably saying something that's been said by other people, but one thing that I guess I would like to get off my chest is that we're not people, especially just a regular person, is not valued in this society. I think it starts from, in some ways, how we're taught to go along with the plans of people that are, quote-unquote, higher up. We're taught, of course, to go to school, which is good, but we are taught to respect authorities, and perhaps that's we respect them when we shouldn't, and beyond when we shouldn't, and then we can become overly mad when we realize we've been really taken. Now, sometimes that sense of being taken is actual, and sometimes and it's clear, and perhaps other times it's not too clear. But when we sense that we've been taken for a ride in some way, we may overreact. And
okay,
but we've been taught.
Okay, you're bringing us, you're giving us an overview. It sounds amorphous so far. Could you bring it home? And by giving us a real example of what it is you're talking about.
Well, I was listening to a commentary before your show came on, and the person, it was Chris Hedges, was saying that one of the points he was making that I see is that for many years, the political parties, Democrats and Republicans, have made promises, and I'll summarize, made promises to working people, keep the unions going, jobs will be returning, and NAFTA is going to work for you, and so forth. And these things didn't come to fruition. And people have been patient. You know, change, yes, we can, and all these different things. And it didn't come enough to people. And people have been patient very often. And they're getting to the point, obviously, when you see what happened. I'm not saying that I think it's just or was correct to do what people did. And but there's got to be a level of frustration included in that. I'm not saying everyone was frustrated from waiting for a long time, but I would believe that there's an element of that. Of
why
frustration.
Why are you giving, as they say, plausible deniability to people who decided on their own? They didn't ask you permission whether they should go there.
That's okay. That's true. You know what? I don't want to go to the extent where I'm giving them a way out. I'm just seeing them as, even though I think they're wrong, I'm seeing them as people also. But I believe that there's a frustration in people who haven't acted like that.
True. Just however, here's the thing. The question, if you could refocus a bit, you'd see where the question is right in front of you, but you're not seeing it. The question is not them. The question has very little, in a sense, to do with those people because it's so apparent that they were running against the tide of the general tide of society. They were being aberrant. They were being violent and so forth.
Right.
That's not you. That's not me.
Right, right.
Okay,
right.
So then the question becomes, what happened to people like you and me? Where was our influence felt?
Where was our influence felt?
Yes.
Is that what you say?
Yep.
Okay. Well, I would say if for people that voted for Biden against Trump, I would say
in
the protests of people who were protesting against the police violence and just the way things are going, where police are killing you, where the pandemic is not being handled properly. We're not getting out of the standard of living what we should be getting. The wages aren't going up. a whole lot of things. It just is not going right. Maybe
I'm not disputing your point. You make a very legitimate point. I'm saying you need to go a little further with it. We should go a little further with it.
Okay.
By saying that our side checked out and created a vacuum. This is what happens in a vacuum. Our side just walked away and left it to those in Congress and whoever else are the designated leaders to do the job.
And they didn't do a good job.
Well, what could you blame them? Nobody is on your back. Nobody's watching you. Nobody's making it clear that you're being watched. People are taking it easy and giving you a lot of space. Remember, nothing happens in a vacuum. Nothing. So we walked off the job, too. And that's what I wanted you to see.
We haven't protested. We haven't made our needs felt. And we have not, in a conclusive way, said, if you don't do this, we're not going to give you this that you want. If you want our votes, or if you want, there's a cutoff point. We didn't really say, look, we voted for you before. Now we're looking for a stronger point from you as far as Trump, or as far as income, as far as health care, as far as all the things that we should have. Some of these things they have. We didn't, that's true, we did. We got comfortable with making do.
The fact is, they acted, although very violently, but they acted in their interest. And that's what the system respects, when people come together and act in their interests. We gave that up a long time ago. We just think, you know, let's give them a chance. Let's see what they do. If it gets really, really horrendous, a couple of us will get together and march or something. But we have given up the right, and I use the word right, we have given up the right to keep tabs on the government so that it doesn't get out of hand, even though we know it is out of hand, even though the government makes stupid and dangerous decisions, we say nothing. So in that vacuum, we have to assume responsibility for the fact that we created, we ourselves, our constituencies created a vacuum.
True.
And they stepped right in it.
And I would say this, too. Sometimes when you listen to people like Chris Hedges or people that state things pretty clearly, and sometimes if you just, I guess, have a quiet moment to yourself, you can see certain things that aren't right. I would say one of the things, the regular guy doesn't get to state what the issue should be. You know, he doesn't get to state that, you know, hey, we would like a maximum interest charge on our credit card rates, for example, or, you know, pay our mortgages or stop the mortgages or stop the rents and give us a check.
Let me just say this. We,
a lot of things,
long ago stopped understanding what government is for. What is the purpose of government? And we see that, we arrogate that responsibility solely to the people in Washington or people in the state capitol or people in the city council.
Mm-hmm.
They're responsible. We walk away. And that is the case right across the United States. Major issues are decided by people who have no stake in the outcome. And that is because we abrogate our responsibility to be part of the discussion and the solution. But when these things happen and people say, oh, point at the government again, it's the government's fault. No, it's not the government's fault. They're doing what they're accustomed to doing. And we, as it turns out, are doing what we're accustomed to doing, which is nothing. We just talk. We don't do. And that is what has to change. Thanks for getting us started today.
I'm going to try to change this year.
In good form. Thank you. Allison from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Hi, Eutrice.
Hello.
You know, I had a line of conversation in mind, and as I sat here listening to you and the person who had just called before me, I had to change a little bit because I totally disagree with you when it comes to your assertion that we, I guess meaning we black people, have just given up and we're not trying to fight the good fight. That's what I basically heard you say. And I don't think that's correct. I think Black Lives Matter, that whole movement, is something that has grown because people are so have become so frustrated that they're willing to go back out to the streets, where it's really dangerous for black people in case no one's noticed. But when we do it, it's bad behavior, it's a riot, and we're met with military force. And it's just, you know, we shouldn't even have to talk about the difference in the way the two different situations have been treated with the, and they were rioters that went to the Capitol versus Minneapolis when George Floyd was killed. There shouldn't be a comparison. There's a 17-year-old white boy somewhere in this country who killed two people in cold blood, and he's out on bail. There are people that were in that Capitol that should have been, I don't want to say shot, but they should have been addressed very, very differently than they were. But my other point that I wanted to talk about is just something I've thought about for years in terms of how I envision power, global power and American power especially. I think there are the ruling class, I think they see the whole world as a giant chessboard. And, you know, you have to have pawns in your chess game. And then you have the power plays, the king and the queen and so on. And I think that even now, they're looking at that giant chessboard and they're playing a game with us. And they're moving us around and they're playing mind games with us. And then the other point I wanted to make is that I think that why those particular white people were so attracted to Trump is that he gave more value. He gave them something that they felt was valuable, their whiteness. They may not have had a job. They may have been, you know, hooked on some opiate or whatever, but at least they're still white. And Trump acknowledged that and said, yeah, you go, guys and gals. You got the power. We're going to make America great again by making sure that white people maintain their privilege, whatever that is. So don't bother looking at the fact that you don't have a job right now. You're still white. Don't worry about the fact that you're not getting good health care. You're still white. That's worth something, isn't it? So that's my take on it.
Okay. Well, I agree. I see how you see things. And I have no difference or argument with how you see things. How you see things is how you see things.
And yeah, I mean, these white people, I hate to keep saying it that way, but that's what it is. The type of white people who descended on D.C. are the ones that don't understand something that Ross Perot talked about years ago when he made the statement about when you hear that giant sucking sound, that's going to be all the jobs leaving America and going to Mexico and wherever else. Black people didn't make that happen. Poor people didn't make that happen. Who made that happen? Why are the jobs in Mexico and China and Southeast Asia? I didn't do it.
So you didn't do it. Is that a sense of comfort that you didn't do it?
But no, it's not about comfort. It's about educating people enough to know who the real bad guys are, so to speak. Who are the ones that are creating an environment of inequality?
You're talking about education.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
education is not in sync with our collective condition. It's just not working. There is a yawning gap between the two.
I agree. That's why I wrote a letter to my congressman asking whether or not he was going to support Tom Cotton's idiotic proposal to not allow the 1619 Project to be taught as part of American history.
Yes, but that is not, I hate to tell you, in my view, that is not the fight. That is just your civic action. It isn't a fight. We have abandoned...
When we fight, we get killed. When we fight,
we
get killed for
There's always
a... wearing some bull horns and some fur on our heads.
I understand that there is that concern because it is documented. So that doesn't have to be the approach all the time. We have ceased coming together as a community and strategizing together on what it is we need to do. We don't talk to each other anymore. Everybody is in an individual bunker. And naturally, they're predisposed to defending their, quote, position, unquote. It is no longer about an individual position. It is about the collective impact, the collective effect. And therefore, our consciousness, and this is what we need to learn, is you take collective action.
I think that's happening in different pockets around the country. And again, I'll go back to Black Lives Matter and how that movement has managed to galvanize so many people across so many different backgrounds, because there's a message there. And I've said for a long time, I think the big thing that's missing in the movement toward equality is measurable goals. You can...
Well, we all have different ideas, except we have them in different places, and we have them in different minds. We have not seen collective action. Look, it's not that it hasn't been done before. I refer you to the actions of Marcus Mosiah Garvey. That was organization.
And what happened to him?
It doesn't matter what happened to him. You see, that's the point. What happened to Martin Luther King? They understood what might happen to them, and they continued their struggle. That was their contribution. They're saying, I'm putting my life on the line because this is bigger than even me.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have people like that with that kind of courage anymore. And we don't have a sense of collectivism. We don't have that. That is the power. Why do you think, ordinarily, if you look at the people who went down to Washington, D.C. and behaved like a bunch of hooligans, individually, they don't count in their community. Nobody knows who they are. They're not a force to be reckoned with. But the minute they put themselves together, as horrendous as their aims and objectives were, they got action. They got noticed. And they got more members, believe it or not. We're still fiddling around talking about, well, they ought to do this. We expect this from government. You don't know what you expect because nobody's been talking.
And well, that gets back to my point of measurable goals, something that you can
well,
say, you know, this is a milestone. This is a benchmark, and this is a milestone. And we don't go back and measure. Have we actually accomplished what we set out to do, and have we clearly
defined what we set out to do?
I mean, this is a giant project that has to be managed.
No. Listen to me for a second. The idea is there's no one way. This is what people... There's no one way.
Well, I agree. That's why I'm saying that. That's why I'm saying that Black Lives Matter has made a difference. It just has to be continued.
Of course, it made
there,
a difference.
And there are plenty of other people. I'm sorry?
But I'm saying, of course, it made a difference. They set out to make a difference. They set out with a bunch of goals and objectives, and they did very well with that. But Black Lives Matter is by no means the example.
Example, but not the example. And in a lot of cities, a lot of states, they're working together with the NAACP and the Urban League. They're linking up. They're linking arms, linking brains.
May I suggest something to you? And I don't want to sound condemnatory. But
I already know where you're headed on that one.
There's a need for new approaches. I just referred to you. If you look at your history, you would see Marcus Mosiah Garvey got everything that we know today as political action rolling. The largest combination, because it was also in the Caribbean, a panoramic approach. Yes. And look how long ago that was. And it was the same organization putting pressure, disciplined action. Yes. We haven't had a Marcus Mosiah Garvey for a long time.
Right, right.
So it's hard to unify.
I think the way society's set up now, it makes it very easy to divide and continue to conquer.
But we need to get real. We haven't been real for a long time. We've been hypothesizing. We've been philosophizing. We've been doing everything except putting putting the pedal to the metal and getting something done with an understanding that it represents a broad spectrum of our community and their direct involvement. No need figureheads anymore. It's good to have somebody saying, I represent this and that organization, but everybody is looking at what are you standing on? Where are your people?
Well, Eutrice, I'll go back and reread some things about Garvey. I know that one of his primary things was relocating back to Africa, which I'm not sure that's something that I would have on my list of objectives, but I hear you.
Marcus Garvey, we do this all the time. He responded within his time, and he responded to the issues of his time. And let it not be forgotten that Marcus Garvey's movement spawned the fight for independence throughout the Black world. So we have to have an entirely different analysis of our own history. And thanks for calling. I appreciate your points. I really do.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Love you.
Thanks a lot. Harvey from Berkeley. How you doing, Harvey?
Great, great, wonderful, Eutrice. And how you doing?
I'm hanging in.
All right, we all are. Well, today I have an idea that might, and I use the word might, help to empower us in the not-too-distant future. Right now we vote for people who represent us on various issues. But the problem is that politicians, in order to advertise and all the things they have to do, have to raise a tremendous amount of money. The bar has been set really high. And to get this money, I mean, Bernie Sanders went to the people, but most of the politicians, they're funded by corporations. And so when the corporations want those politicians to vote one way or another on a certain issue, in a way, they're obliged to do it, and that doesn't necessarily work for us. and people feel very powerless. So my idea is that with new technology, and technology is always changing, and so with new kind of technology, it could be that we could vote directly on issues. We won't need politicians. We could vote through our computers, our cell phones. I mean, we're all pretty much connected now. So maybe once a week, for an hour or two, we look at the various issues that affect us and our local communities, and we can hear both sides of the argument and then vote on it directly on our cell phone and computer. Now, we all know that computers have been hacked in the past, but there is new technology. There's one called blockchain, B-L-O-C-K-C-H-A-I-N,
yes.
Which is...
I've been reading about it.
Yes, it's a way to secure, it's called a secure ledger. It's a way to secure information so that once we vote, it is recorded and secured. And there's also different types of new types of encryption, including quantum encryption, which is supposedly supposed to be unbreakable. Of course, you know, if there's a situation, people will try to hack it. So I'm not talking about perfection here, but this may work in the future where in a local community with local issues, we can all vote directly on the issues. We don't necessarily have to vote for someone who will represent us on the issue, and then they can be compromised. And so this is a possible, and I say possible, way for us to gain back our power and feel that we do make a difference, and we're not just vulnerable to the politicians who mostly are financed by the corporations. And so that's one possibility.
Well, thanks. I've been reading on it. I still don't quite understand it, but I'm continuing to read on it. It sounds like a great idea, having applicability directly to the people. That's the one attractive thing to me about it, that it doesn't have to go through all these different filters being corrupted every step of the way, that you get the real reaction. And it's directly from the people with this technology. Let's see how it goes. But thank you for bringing it to us and to our attention today. Thanks a lot, Hari.
Thank you, Idris.
Thank you. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon. I was looking at the dictionary for the word democracy, and there were numerous definitions of democracy, things like ability to vote, the rule of the majority, free elections, control of the majority, social equality, and where the common people can rule, a republic, in several dictionaries. And I've been thinking about that, and I'm thinking about what happened when the founders, the slave owners and slave supporters, created a constitution. And my view of the word democracy means government by and for the people. And as far as I can see, I can't find anywhere in the Constitution where they talk about democracy. And in addition to that, those slave owners who signed the Constitution and whatnot, their idea wasn't to have democracy. Their idea was to take over from the English crown and make the profit and maintain the slave system. So, I think that's important for people to understand that the elite that created the caste system that we have here, and we do have a caste system, and the top caste is the white caste. And that white caste has all the people that have the phenotype that is commonly found in Europe. And the top of that caste is the elite. And they are the ones that really control. So that elite never had the idea of having a real democracy. It used this caste system and the other caste systems like the so-called black caste system and whatnot to control people. So they have done a masterful job of doing that. Now, someone mentioned something about education at one time. I don't think the elite who really run the country want to educate people. There's a difference, education and training. I mean, they're not the same. When you go in the military and you learn how to kill people like I did as an officer in the military, this is about training. And they have done a wonderful job in training the people to get attention away from themselves. So people have to learn that everything is done in their interests. They control all the education, so-called, in quotation marks, and they control the media all over the place, and they are able to manipulate people. So the first thing is people have to know how to play the game and deal with them. Now, it was mentioned that, you know, some people were damaged by doing certain things. That's another thing that you did mention that was very correct. I mean, I think about what was done to me when I was in the military, and because I wouldn't say yes, sir, to white people, I was told I had to do that. I was told that wasn't so good for me to want to swim in the swimming pool where white people were, and I paid a price for that. But I did it anyway. I went
you
to the
can't
theater.
Swim
I wouldn't
with white
sit in
people.
The back. I sat in the front. So I lost. They were able to get rid of me, but I made a position that these things could be addressed. So what I'm saying is we have to understand that the ruling class, the people at the top, want to treat the masses of people as some group that were trained. I don't know if any of you have seen the lion tamers in the circus when Barnum and Bailey were here and how they trained those lions. Well, just think about it. Those who rule, that's how they train the people. They have the people trained. The idea of the way the government is set up, all the levels of government, especially the legislative level, you don't control that. That is controlled by the elite at the top. So I like the idea of a regular democracy where you're in a place like Switzerland, I think they have some of that type of democracy, because this is a very important thing to understand the system that you're living in. And many people do not understand that. And divide and conquer is the chief way the elite, a small group, less than 1%, are able to control people. So people have to get in their mind who the real enemy is. The elite at the top, that's the enemy, that's my opinion, and deal with that. Not be arguing about the various groups that they have broken the people into and used it regularly, the divide and conquer strategy, which is the chief strategy for controlling the people, enriching the elite, and impoverishing the rest of the people slowly but surely.
Let me ask you, David, applying what you've just said to today, what is the most glaring deficit that we are dealing with here?
The most glaring deficit is the fact that the people so successfully kept ignorant of the system that they're in, and they don't understand, they have their attention on things that it shouldn't be on. It should be on the fact that the only way you're going to have any significant change is when people rise up, when they demonstrate, when they confront the elite at the top. It won't happen by dividing people up and this caste system where you are going against people that you're directed to, as the elite does with the Mexicans, the immigrants, the black people, and you are going down the wrong route. Your route should be to the top, to those and that 1% that rarely run the place. And you got to understand that. So most people do not understand that because they are getting, quote-unquote, education from the enemy. You can't have your enemy educating you. You can't have that. But that's what we have here. And, you know, that is the most serious problem. People do not understand the nature of the system they're in. That's why a small group of people can control the whole country in their interests and enriching themselves, as people have been noticing as we go along on a regular basis as everyone else gets poorer and poorer.
Thank you very much, David, for your contribution today. I always look forward to what you have to say because you bring with you decades and decades and decades of personal and professional experience. Thanks so much for your contribution. Ed from Jamaica, you're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon, Latrice.
Good afternoon, Ed.
How are you?
How are your thumbs today?
We're still hanging.
You're still hanging by the thumbs?
Well-developed dexterous, well-developed appendages. well-developed. No, I hear a lot of... I just wanted to, you know, because it gets on my nerves sometimes. I hear a lot of people talk. A lot of people talk on your show. A lot of people talk about the government and the ruling class and all this other. Listen, there's always been a minority of the population throughout history that have controlled the wealth. And the only, but you have to look at history in its whole. The only way that the common people that prevailed was through community. When we banded together, when we had a sense of community, when we had a sense of identity, then we formulated plans and we made moves against society. One of the greatest movements in this society in the 20th century was FDR. FDR came from the elite. He was the lineage of Teddy Roosevelt. He was from the elite class of society. He had no connection with the common man. But what forced him to make the New Deal, what forced him to give the social and economic reforms, there was a vibrant socialist movement in this country. There were two socialist parties. There was the Bolsheviks, and there was unions. And there was a commonality. Everyone shared a commonality. Everyone shared in the community, and they didn't accept the government doing what it had been doing. From the Teapot Dome scandal to the Roaring 20s to the Depression of the 30s to the New Deal. And from that point on in modern history, the powers that be have been trying to take that away from us. And what happened was they took away the sense of family and community. The first community you have is the family. And once you find your foundation there, then you find a love of man, you find a love of yourself, and you develop a community. And communities can work together. And we have perfect examples of communities in our society. The Hasidim, the Oriental, even the East Indian communities, they stick together. They have a commonality and they have a plan. You don't got to beat the whole world. You just got to control your community because you're not going to beat the whole world. But if you don't have any sense of community, if you don't have any foundation, then you've got nothing to move forward with, and you can't resist anything.
Hmm. You might have heard, Allison, her point of view. Did you?
Yeah, I heard her earlier. Mm-hmm.
What do you think she's right about? What do you think she's missing?
Well, I think she's right about certain circumstances that present themselves in this society, but she's wrong about community. It all comes back to community. I've said it before, I'll say it again. All politics is local. You're not going to do anything outside of your own interest. You understand what I'm saying? And what has happened to this society, and I believe it's been a deliberate effort, whether you want to call it the powers that be, the Bilderberg Group, whatever source or force that has done it, there's been a deliberate effort to take away the community and to enhance the individual. The individual, the great myth of America is that I pull myself up by my own bootstraps, that I'm an individual. Nothing of any worth in this society, nothing, no progresses has come by one person. It's been an effort. It's been an effort of the government investment. It's been an effort of community support. And that allowed that one person to rise up and we all profit from the benefit of their invention. Nothing is a solo effort in this world. No man is an island. You understand what I'm saying? And once you really understand that concept, then you know, hey, I'm not going to let anything happen to you that I wouldn't want to happen to myself. And it's just that simple concept that people don't get. Everybody's tied up in their own little bubble. Everybody's tied up in their own little world. I mean, even what happened at the Capitol. All of those people are tied up in their own little sanctum, their own little beliefs, QAnon and all this other garbage. You've got to realize that we're all in this together.
Hmm. Thanks,
Reverend. And that's what the powers that be really fear. Once that idea takes root, then we'll see progress.
I call you Reverend because you're preaching today.
I'm saying, I get tired of hearing it. I mean, all of these.
But I understand. I understand. You make
sense. It makes no sense. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you very much. But that is what we have to do. We have to preach. If that's what it comes to, that's what we've got to do. We have to open people's eyes. Because my theory is there was a lot that distracted us. And intentionally so. We got distracted when they opened up society, the open society, they called it, and, integration, and people were living next to each other who hated each other before. Communities were spawning themselves all over the place. Things were going really well. Jobs were available. People were moving up, although when you study it, you see that there was a hierarchy. It never broke. It was always who got the better jobs, who got the lower paying jobs, and who got no jobs at all. It's a constant struggle. It is a constant struggle because people have a vested interest in. When I say people, I mean the powers that be. That's the phrase that's so annoying because we don't have names for all of the powers that be. But the system is organized in a way that it can predict the result for generations to come. And we are stuck in the moment thinking that that is the problem. We solve this one problem and we're okay. No. The plans that are put together, the ideas that people commit to with our taxpayer money, let me just, it just crossed my mind. Donald Trump's father was one of the first builders in certainly in New York City to literally design segregated communities, created white Bantustans right there in New York City, fenced around and gated and everything, going all the way back to the 40s and 50s, in one of the most liberal cities that you could think of. I was on my way home from Texas, flying toward New York City at the time to catch a connecting flight. And there were two pilots sitting behind me. We got news that our plane was just not going to make it. We would have to stay overnight at a local airport hotel, and then a new plane will be assigned. Okay. One guy says to the other, I can't believe, I'm the first thing I have to do is I got to see my lawyer. His friend says, well, why? He says, because I just learned that I am not in a segregated community anymore. He lived in New York. He's talking about a segregated community. What drove him mad was, he said it was a Saturday, and he went outside, and there are people mowing their lawns, as, you know, the Saturday ritual. And he, too, decided he'll go and mow his little piece of lawn. And lo and behold, what did he see? A sight so shocking, so unpleasant, so intolerable. He is now going to sue the development that he bought a house in because it didn't level with him. He was under the impression that the entire community was under restricted covenants, he said. This is New York. Restricted covenants means that you sign on, you agree on a piece of paper, on a document, that you will not sell your property if you move to people who are not welcome there. Mostly blacks, people of color. In this day and age. So people who are under some illusion that they're living in a nice house in a nice neighborhood, here's a guy who is at his wit's end sitting right behind me. Because in his head, his investment of a couple of $100,000 buying a piece of property in the wrong neighborhood. It's fenced, it's gate guarded, and it's only white people living there. This is what he believes he's entitled to, because that was what was promised as part of the whole scheme of things, that for as long as the community existed, it will exclude people of color. In New York City, in Queens, where Trump's father started this. You see what I'm saying? So we are very, very badly miseducated about the reality that we live in. We have no comprehension, really, as to what it is. And he was frothing. I got concerned. I said, this guy's going to have a heart attack. So I think Ed's point is well taken, as was David's point. You have to understand that
we are just part of the process. The process began a long time ago. This is our point at which we enter. But it didn't start with us. It's not going to end with us. But we have to make a difference. We have to interrupt it. Because as sure as anything, other generations coming up will have to deal with the same thing. It's a permanent flaw in the society. Thanks so much. We've come to the end of our program today. Thank you all for contributing your considered opinions. I really am grateful for that. I feel very proud of the caliber of listeners that we have and who contribute meaningfully to our collective discussion. Thank you so much. It's the weekend. Have a good one, a restful one, and connect with people that you know and love. Bye-bye.